Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hey, Mona. You know, we're a year plus into this global pandemic, and COVID has hit everybody. We've talked about industries on a past episode and various projects, but it's also affected high net worth individuals, right?
Yeah, it's strange. COVID affected certain industries. Some have done really, really well. I keep reading every day how billionaires have become multi-billionaires. But it's interesting to see how it's affected the CBI industry. We have our own ideas, but we thought that it would be a good idea to have someone within the industry outside of the U.S. to come and speak to us on this.
Right. And by CBI, you mean, of course, citizenship by investment, correct?
Yes.
Do they call it anything else?
Often referred to, Mark, as the golden visa. So a golden visa is when you are investing or doing something within a country's infrastructure using money and getting an immigration benefit. So yeah, CBI, golden visas, they're used interchangeably.
So how are we going to explore this topic?
To explore this area, Mark, we really needed somebody outside of our little US globe. So I thought that a perfect person would be Toshio Rahman from CM Immigration Services.
Mona, I'm excited as well to have Toshio Rahman on today's show. He is the director of CM International Immigration Service, which is an immigration consultancy that helps clients obtain passports, permanent residence, and visas from around the world. Mona, as you mentioned, not just here domestically in the U.S., but around the world. And his position has allowed him to live in Morocco, Malaysia, Turkey, and Canada, where he specializes in building partnerships with local stakeholders to promote various migration programs. Toshio, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, you guys. I'm very excited to be here.
We're excited to have you.
Toshio, before we dive into the questions that I have for you, tell us a little bit about your company.
Sure. It's actually a family business. My dad, back in the early 90s.
I love the way you say back in. That wasn't that long ago.
That's true. It was for me. For me, it's time is different.
I'm so old.
So my dad is from Bangladesh, and he immigrated to Canada in the late 80s. And he realized that there was a huge gap in the immigration market in terms of helping people from Bangladesh move around the world. He was able to do it successfully on his own. And so he started this company, CM International, which he originally helped clients immigrate to Canada back in the day when it was extremely easy and extremely quick. And so over the last 25 years plus, we've sort of warped into this immigration consultancy that's global. And now we help clients pretty much move around the world to any country that offers some type of PR or visa or citizenship program.
Yeah, second citizenship, second passport is such an in term for almost every country right now. But what are the top countries are you seeing for investment from your particular pool of investors?
Thank you, Mona, for mentioning that. Every client is different, as you know.
Yeah.
Our market is really Southeast Asian, South Asian based. So their mentality might differ from a North American or from a European. But from our market, we see that the Caribbean is very popular at the moment. Turkey as well. The US and the UK are coming up very, very quickly. We saw a decline maybe 5-6 years ago, but I think post-Trump presidency with the new administration, the US will definitely be something on the rise. Canada is still pretty steady, but as you know, there's some changes there. One trend that I can say very clearly that we've seen is that more and more people are wanting their citizenship quicker rather than going through a PR route. So
yeah,
we've tried to adapt to that as well.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest disadvantages for most of these countries, UK, US, Canada. It takes a lot longer than some of these other countries to get to the actual PR. But what we are seeing is actually some movement outwards. I don't know if you are seeing that too. Canadians moving out of Canada, perhaps because of taxes.
Yeah, most of our clientele are not in North America or Europe, but I do have a couple clients, and through partners, I've heard that there is somewhat of an exodus of clients trying to move to low tax haven countries. That may not be the only reason that they're moving, but it definitely is a motivating factor. they usually end up on some sunny beach in the Caribbean somewhere, or kind of a low tax haven country in Europe.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people may not have ties to the original country, meaning that they can work remotely or their family is moving with them. So it's easy to do. It's not really my background, but I have seen it happening recently.
You know, Turkey is relatively new, because Turkey wasn't a program that we dealt with earlier. And now right. suddenly it just seems to be the one. For people coming to the US, people from non-treaty countries are going to Turkey in order to do the E2 program. But at the same time, we have seen people who actually want to settle in Turkey.
Yeah.
I understand with Turkey, it's all about buying real estate. And unfortunately, like everywhere else, fraud is rampant over there in the real estate sector. So how does a company like yours deal with that?
So one of the things that we have done is that I relocated there. I moved there from Malaysia.
Oh, nice.
I was there for about a year and a half with my wife. And during that time, we really built those partnerships with real authentic companies that we did our due diligence with and our background checks with. And so I felt that taking that action was needed for authenticity's sake and just to really back up our clients. It is a lot of money and is a huge investment. So we don't want to give our clients the wrong impression. So you're absolutely right, Mona. I mean, if you go on Google and you search the Turkish Citizenship by Investment Program, you'll get a number of companies that offer this rate and this property, etc. But I can't say all of it is bad or all of it's unauthentic, but there is a lot of room for fraud, whether it's in terms of valuation of properties or overpricing or legal fees or not being truly authentic with the timelines it takes. So what we've done is we've built relationships with people on the ground who I've worked with, and I was there for a year and a half to make sure it got through. That's how we ensure transparency for our clients.
Yeah, that's very important. But what Mark and I are really looking into right now is how COVID has affected high net worth globally, not just their movement, the type of countries they're going to. Yeah. And the one thing that I have noticed, well, we do know that Canada, which, as you say, used to be very popular, especially from Southeast Asia, right. and they've put their Pro-Quebec program, which was their only investment program, on hold again. What, to 2025 now or something, right?
Right. Yeah, it was quite a shock for us, but somewhat expected. Our company is a family-run business. My younger sister is in charge of our Canada program, and I think you're referring to the Quebec Investor program.
Right.
Yeah, it was strange. We do have a lot of popularity in that. It is quite lengthy and expensive, but we do have clients who do it. But I believe it was in late 2020 that we were told that it was going to be on hold for a couple more years. The reasons given were that there was a huge backlog that they needed to get through, thus the break. Also, there's an idea out there that a lot of the people who actually immigrate to Quebec actually don't end up living in that province. They end up leaving.
They end up buying the property in Vancouver and causing all kinds of problems.
So it is it is difficult. I'm not sure the exact reason, but COVID definitely played a role into the backlogs, of course, because of limited migration. It's a really good program if you can qualify for it. Just like the States or any Western country, you don't get citizenship immediately. You get PR, but Canadian government does a really good job of integrating you. But it's a shock. It was paused. I hope it comes back. I think there's a lot of interest globally for it.
One of the reasons I read, actually, that the Quebec program was possibly put on hold is because there are worrying signs that Canadians are taking too much debt for purchasing real estate, because your real estate market is just going through the roof right now, Toshio. And isn't it that you have to buy real estate in order to get PR?
Yes and no. The real estate is not a requirement for the program. It's an investment into the province, which is refundable, which is given back to you after 5 years. There's also a slight modification. If you don't have enough to meet the requirement, there's a lower amount, which you don't get back. But you're right. A lot of clients who do come into the country end up buying real estate as well. And there's a huge bubble here in Canada at the moment. Prices are extensively high.
Yeah.
There's a prediction that it'll pop relatively soon. So I think a lot of clients are trying to take advantage of that. But one of the problems we have in Canada is that, like yourselves, we have a number of provinces. I know you have states. Because Quebec is the easiest one to get into, many people will land there, spend the minimal amount of time, and then migrate to either Toronto and Ontario or Vancouver, Alberta. So in fact, when they submitted the application, they said they were going to live in Quebec. And then the Quebec government had actually based their work and their acceptance based on that fact. But in the end, it didn't end up happening. So you have a lesser migrant population there. So I can also understand from the Quebec point of view why they're upset and they don't want to continue or they want to pause. But migration is obviously a big thing, and people need to move to where it's best for them. And Quebec is, I'm trying to relate it to an American state, is very different than the rest of Canada. It's a French-speaking province.
Yeah, I know Quebec pretty well. Yes, if you don't speak French, you don't have a good time there.
Right. Yes, it's very hard for a lot of immigrants to adjust unless you came from French-speaking background or a French-speaking culture. So a lot of immigrants do move out of Quebec.
So with all of this excess capital that we're seeing high net worth people having, right, are you seeing investments into other states like, say, New Brunswick? There is a program there, right?
Yeah. Technically speaking, there is a program in almost every province, but to the point is they're not marketed very well. So a lot of people don't know where they go. I personally have never seen anyone go to the New Brunswick program. It's a very, very isolated part of Canada. It's very far from the rest of Canada. I live in Vancouver. So even if I took a plane, it would take me almost 6 hours plus 5 hours of time difference. So it took me 11 hours to get there.
Wow.
So it is very difficult. I think most people tended to go towards the Quebec program just because it was the easiest of all the programs.
Right.
Maybe they're in the Atlantic provinces, New Brunswick, Newfoundland, Nova Scotia. I think with time, their programs may become more popular, but the Quebec one's been around for a while, so it has a standing in that regard.
Tashi, are you seeing this real estate phenomena in other countries that you deal with, say perhaps Malaysia?
Yeah, the Malaysia program was a little different in that it wasn't a PR or a citizenship. It was a 10-year visa. It was extremely popular for our company up until about 2 years ago because of its proximity to Bangladesh, where most of our clients are originally from. It was very popular. You could go there for the day or for a holiday, or you could come back to Bangladesh if you wanted. And the program was relatively cheap. We're talking about $75,000 refundable for anyone below 50, and
yeah,
about
that is cheap. That
yeah,
is cheap.
and $32,000 for anyone above 50 years of age. So when a lot of clients got the visa, they definitely bought property because it was so affordable for them in Malaysia. And I don't know if you've been or not, but it's a beautiful country with sandy beaches and blue waters.
Don't tempt me. Don't tempt me. But let me ask you, did you see high net worth individuals going out to these countries during COVID just to escape from the cities?
No. And this was actually a very interesting fact. The Malaysian government went into something called an MCO, pretty much a movement control order, which is their equivalent of a lockdown.
Ah.
And because of that, even MM2H holders for the longest time, Malaysia, my second home, which is the visa I speak of, weren't allowed back in the country. And there was actually a huge fuss about it. A lot of investors were arguing against the Malaysian government, letting them know that we're not just investors, but many of us are residents of this country. Our kids go to school here. We have businesses here, et cetera, et cetera. So we should be treated like citizens. And so the government has switched that policy now that if you pre-apply, you can come back from overseas. But for the longest time when COVID started, a lot of clients were not allowed back in. And this created a lot of issues between investors and the government.
Very interesting. I also read that during COVID, a lot of people did decide who weren't there before that they wanted to have a second citizenship because of COVID. Because when they were asked, you know, tick the box, why have you chosen second citizenship? They said because of COVID.
Absolutely. So for in Bangladesh, we have a very unstable political system, regardless of COVID. It's just not that smooth all the time. And that has been one of the reasons we have so many clients and we've done so well is that people want a future for their kids, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They want to be able to send their kids to the best schools and have a life and then and get the best jobs. And Bangladesh really isn't the place for it, they've realized. So during COVID, it just exacerbated the situation even more that the government wasn't able to really deal with the pandemic that well and still isn't able to, that, corruption is very rampant, that people are getting sick left, right, and center, and there's no spots in hospitals for them. So we definitely saw an uptick of clients applying for citizenships because they just wanted that option of being able to leave in case anything happened or they had to overnight.
Mm. At one time, Europe was the place for Bangladesh. I don't think it is anymore.
Yeah, London has a huge Bangladeshi population.
Yeah.
Same with Italy and Spain and Greece. The UK has clamped down a little bit on immigration, especially post-Brexit. I think they're getting a little bit more picky with who comes in, who comes out. But there are certain pathways still to the UK.
Sounds like they're really seeking mobility and residency options.
A lot of our clients, if they have the ability, they want that passport instead of that PR. They'll move or they'll shift towards a country that'll offer them that.
Yeah, the European programs as well, they do involve a lot of purchasing properties like in Portugal and Greece. Mm-hmm. And there is that big issue about the depreciation of properties in these countries, as is Turkey, I hear. Turkey, there is that problem that if you have to buy property at, what is it, 250,000, it may not be 250,000 a year later.
Well, yes and no. Istanbul is one of the biggest cities in the world. So one of the trends that they've seen over the last 20, 25 years is urbanization, right? People who live in the country will migrate towards Istanbul, and they get over 20 million tourists a year outside of COVID. So the general trend in terms of real estate is that it does appreciate, usually between 5 to 7% annually. So what we've done is, as you know, Mona, is that a lot of these citizenship programs, they have to, there's an extra thing that you have to do, right? In the Caribbean, you have to invest into the country.
Yeah,
in Turkey, you have to buy a house. So what we've done is we've worked with some of the higher end developers, the ones who have a really good reputation and been around. So for us specifically, we sell properties which will hopefully appreciate. There's that trend is upward. So for clients, it's not that you're buying something and it'll go down, but you'll get your citizenship. For us, we're trying to make it a package where you're buying something good, it'll appreciate in value. Hopefully you can rent it out and you get your passport. So it's a win-win-win on all three checks, in all three boxes for them. But I definitely understand the point that you make. There are other countries where the real estate market really isn't that reliable. And so it's really not that great of an investment. And most people in those situations tend to go towards another option if it is available. I'm thinking that in the Caribbean, for example, a lot of them have the NDFs, right? The National Development Fund donations, or
But that's problematic if they're going to the Caribbean or they're doing Turkey for entry to the US, because if you want to enter the US, you have to show residency. So if you do donation, then you don't have a residence. And if you actually donate or you actually invest in property, then that does give you an edge.
Ah.
Yeah.
Amona, I have a question then for you. Is because you are based in the States and you do the EB-5 and the E-2, where do you find most of your clients coming from through the E-2 option? Where is their home residence or their home nationalities?
Oh, for the US, E-2s, everywhere. Literally everywhere. I know there is a trend for people to buy Caribbean and Turkish from countries like China and India, because they are not treaty countries. But generally, treaty countries from all sides, you will see them. Yeah.
I think that's a trend that we've seen globally, is that, yes, of course, the Indias and the Chinas and the South Asias are usually, and the Middle East, usually these people have the highest numbers of applicants globally. But at the moment with COVID, I was looking at some of the numbers last night. There are people migrating just globally from each direction. You know, you'll always find someone, Canadians going here, or people from Bangladesh going there, or the Chinese going to the States. Like, it's very hard to exactly pinpoint. The last year has been somewhat chaotic in terms of migration. And I think people have realized that they needed those safety nets or those backups, or need to move their family to the best place for them.
Yeah, we've had Bangladeshi clients for some time, but we have seen an uptick in them.
Yeah.
But not necessarily in where you would think. That's the interesting part. What about you? Are you seeing that more people are interested in the US programs?
Yeah, absolutely. I think post-Trump presidency, there is a definite interest. We've had a lot of people contact us about the EB-5 and the E-2 visas, which we didn't have.
Yeah, unfortunately, he wasn't a good ambassador for immigration.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is really important to highlight is that the world is so interconnected that, I mean, we know globally what's happening in some of the major superpowers around the world. And unfortunately, the States was just on headline news for the last 4 years, and for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And so anytime something was said negatively about immigration or a certain type of people or keeping those people out, it was felt, right? And I lived during that presidency in three different countries. And that's a sentiment I can echo that I saw among all people. I was just telling my wife the other day that we haven't heard anything negative about Biden, and it's been 2 months of his presidency, which is great, you know. Hopefully it correlates with the migration. And I think people really continue to see the States as the place, you know, where they can have the American dream and settle down and have their kids. And so I definitely think there will be an interest in the next couple weeks, months, and years.
Well, on paper, that's the case. But in actuality, I am not hearing that on the ground. So when Rebecca and I do travel, we have heard, and this was pre-Trump too, a number of criticisms about living in the US. And one of them being that we work too hard here.
That's a fascinating point. I can definitely understand that. I mean, one of the things I had to learn to do is put my Western lifestyle and biases and mentality out of the window when I lived in other places, because it didn't really adjust. And so you had to kind of adapt. Yeah, I can understand that point of view. But I also think if you move back 10, 20, 30 years ago, Canada and North America were sort of the shining lights, the goal for most people in terms of where to migrate to. And I have a prediction personally that I think that those countries will start to do better after COVID. And I think more and more people who are able to do it will choose those options. But at the same time, qualifications, both financially, in terms of documentation, language, they are getting harder and harder, right? So they do want the best, the cream of the crop. So that's something that we find a challenge, is that we have good candidates, but they might not get that 7 on the IELTS, or they might not, you know, have exactly the 900,000 for the EB5. So we're trying to find options for everyone.
So, Toshio, I have a little bit of a sensitive question here. I'll say sensitive because some people might take it as being a little sensitive.
Sure.
I know you deal a lot with sort of Muslim-based countries. Mm-hmm. And we being women, we deal a lot with women from these type of countries too. Well, actually from all countries, not just countries like Bangladesh and Malaysia. We have seen a definite uptake for some time in professional women coming to us. And that's women from Nigeria, from places like Bangladesh, where they just feel that if they stay in their country, they're just not going to get very far because it's a men-only type of environment.
That's an accurate sentiment for sure. I've seen it with my own eyes. I can't speak for other countries that I've never visited or lived in or worked on, but for the countries that I have, I think that there are more and more professional women coming up, and they want the best for their futures and their families as well. And their home country might not be the best place for them. Not to say that's applicable for everyone. I think you might have seen that report a couple of years back saying that Nigeria, Egypt, and Bangladesh are the three countries in the world where the wealth demographic, or the demographic of people who are becoming wealthy, is the fastest growing.
Yeah.
A lot of those people who are becoming wealthy and business CEOs and business entrepreneurs and et cetera are women.
A few years ago as well, we often had a number of women who came to us through asylum.
Right.
And there was a route through asylum. But then President Trump managed to eliminate that from the criteria for asylum. So that route no longer exists for many women. So this is really one of the only options.
I definitely see the trend as well. The most typical application we do see is a family, though. We usually don't see women applying by themselves for any of our programs. It's usually with their spouse and their kids. But regardless of that, we are trying to find options that can help minorities, that can help women, that can help non-typical applicants as well, because we feel that there exists a route. We should definitely be able to push it for them and try to encourage them to apply if it's applicable for them.
Okay. So with the COVID coming in for some of these countries, these outside of, say, Canada, UK, US, have you seen prices being slashed?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that has led to more applications. I think I can speak for most people when I say that last year in March, when this all started happening, we were all just taken back.
Yeah.
I'm sure none of us had really been through anything like this before. So honestly, our company for the first month or 2 months had to shut down just because of local regulations. So we really had, you know, we had interest coming in, but we couldn't process anything because our offices were inaccessible. So as the pandemic continued, we saw a lot of countries slash their prices. I'm thinking mostly in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
This led to more applications, absolutely, for sure, because at the end of the day, money is a huge factor for applicants. In other places, we didn't really see prices go down, but what we did see was applications were processed quicker, perhaps, or they were trying to make it up. A lot of developers, for example, in Turkey would cover certain legal fees or certain real estate fees because they knew they needed to sell these units. Mm. So we tried to do what's best for our clients and what's most affordable. And we tried to negotiate with as many partners as possible just to get applications in. My father made it a principle just to try to help as many people as we could in any way we could. And we even cut our own fees just to make things easier for people. We're still doing that now, but
how nice of you.
No, it's of course. I mean, one of the things, I mean, you work in this industry as well. We try to find a balance between making a profit, but of course, trying to do what's best for people in our communities as well. We think we found that balance, but it's an ever-changing industry.
So Toshio, I have one more question for you also. Through the pandemic, because of the pandemic, people couldn't travel, obviously, and visit in a way they used to before. Because before, if you were going to spend a few hundred thousand on a piece of property in Turkey, you would come out and visit and see it and see where it was situated. And now you're relying really on online media to show you. Did you find that not being able to visit changed people's attitude during COVID, or were they still ready to just buy it through a picture?
I would say it was a 50-50 thing. Once the pandemic started, travel at one point was restricted between Bangladesh and Turkey. You couldn't even go if you wanted to, even if you had a valid visa.
Yeah.
So what we did was one of our partners in Turkey found a very unique route in which we could do everything remotely without the client coming, to ensure their safety as well as ours, but to make it convenient for him. And Bangladesh is still somewhat of a traditional society in terms of commercialization and business. So, I mean, if you're going to buy a property, you probably want to see it. For them, it was a hard sell. But as the pandemic continued, we tried to promote not going to Turkey just because it would be a potential threat to clients for their own safety. And more people started kind of catching on. So I would say at this point, about 50% of our clients buy remotely. So our idea sort of worked. And the other 50% are willing to take the risk and they want to come. And understandably so, it's a lot of money. So they will come for a couple of days, see everything, and then purchase there and then go back. Either way, the process doesn't get shorter or longer. It's the same time period, but at least there's satisfaction in terms of that. And for the clients who did buy remotely, we send them videos, we do walkthrough tours, we have photos, we introduce them to everyone remotely. And most people are very satisfied and happy. You always get one or two clients who may not be 100% there, but we try to convince them and get them to the fact that we did sell them a proper property that's easy to rent, easy to sell, and you're getting your citizenship. So we're trying to do what's best for our clients under the current situation.
Well, with that 50-50 split, it sounds like some people took advantage of the opportunity, the people that could see through the technology to the opportunity and thereby take advantage of it. And then there was the people that didn't, the other 50%. So now looking forward, as we're coming out of this global pandemic, do you feel that there's possible opportunities and benefits for people that want to react, or maybe not react, but say act now and look at some of these deals in various countries? Maybe they can get more value for their dollar. Maybe some of the fees might be covered, whether it's by the local government, by some of the deals, or even companies such as yourself. Thank you for that, by the way. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it depends on which perspective you're looking from. In terms of the actual clients, it's a great time right now just because it's affordable. And I'm sure that once the pandemic comes to an end, a lot of these prices will be brought back to the normal setting.
Probably pretty quickly,
So, I mean, for clients, it's good to act. But at the same time, you have to understand that a lot of people here, it's a lot of money we're talking. Even on the cheapest citizenship application around the world, we're talking $50,000, right? For Grenada, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's not just pocket change. We understand that a lot of clients need to think about it. It might be their entire life savings, or it might be a huge portion of their net worth. So we try to accommodate either way. We don't push too often, but if a good deal does come in on a time restraint, we do advise clients to kind of speed up that thinking a little bit because they might lose out. And on the other hand, and in terms of the actual lawyers and governments and institutions that are offering these deals, I think the minute the pandemic is over, prices will start to bounce back because they're incurring too much of a loss. I think they are actually going into some of their own profits and their own margins by cutting fees. But if they hadn't done that, they'd probably get almost no application. So they had to do it just to survive and stay afloat. But a lot of countries have cut prices, not only in the pandemic, but throughout hard times. And the trend usually is that they bring it back to the normal amount once it's safe to do so. So I think by the end of 2021, if the pandemic is ending or nearing ending, I think a lot of countries will start bouncing back to normal rates, and clients will have to make decisions on whether to accept those rates or to try to get them in earlier.
So for possible investors, if they haven't thought about it before, hey, maybe now's the time to think about it. And if you have been thinking about it and been on the fence, maybe now's the time to act. Vice in 2022, looking back like, oh gosh, I should have done it then or pulled the trigger then. Makes sense.
Absolutely.
Toshio, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.